You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Greetings, program.
Licked it sprung a leak.
Man, you're my own personal white noise generator.
You're not getting into Gryffindor.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
And Peter Hughes.
I heard him.
That was Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I know his impressions are getting a lot better, but that.
I thought I heard Lee. A faint Peter Hughes in the distance, but I guess not.
I'm Peter Hughes. Oh, well. Perfect show.
Just push a button. Not that button. Push another button. Keep pushing buttons.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
Pete? Nope, I'm Barry.
I'm Lee.
And he's?
Groovehouse.
All right, so we're going to just carry on here. Flicted's getting a little bit more cavalier and lackadaisical and is showing up, but I guess it doesn't really matter because he didn't try to hook things up until we're in here.
It wouldn't make a difference.
It was traffic's fault.
Traffic's fault.
Steve Winwood. What did he ever do to you?
It wasn't the low spark of high heel boys.
But up.
I know that. All right. So anyway, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. It's the transitional heat front that we're having before the cold front.
It's down here.
Like got up to it's
81 degrees. At Hobby today.
81 degrees.
So that set a record for
30-some-odd-year high, and they're going to hit a 30-some-odd-year low tonight. It's supposed to get down in the upper 30s, maybe 32, maybe right at freezing. But nice and cold. You'll enjoy your motorcycle ride home, maybe.
Fun.
I just got a text from Flicted says he's stuck on 59 and might be late.
You're faster than SMS. That's impressive.
Yeah. Faster than a speeding text. All right, so you can visit us online at geekradio.com. I still own that one. Geekradio.com.
We're not there, though.
Haven't sold that one yet.
No, I haven't sold that one yet. So, or technologybytes.com if you really like typing. We have them both. And you can hang out with us IRC and irc.cuckoo.com. Woo-hoo. The channel is Tech Bytes. Or you can just go to our website and use our IRC client that we have installed there.
In the Javas.
It's Java's as secure as anything.
That's right. Update it.
For certain values of
update
secure
all your Javas.
Anything.
Well, it's no super fish.
I got a Java update today. I was busily working and window popped up out of nowhere saying I needed to install Java, the 80 point, which confused me because I didn't think I had Java installed in the first place. But I said okay, like a good like.
You can never really get rid of it.
Don't install the task little bar there.
Ask Jeeves is awesome. Yeah.
You mean you don't want the Ask toolbar? The Ask toolbar can answer all of your questions if you just ask it.
Kiss my ass.
I see what you did there.
Is that a descendant of Jeeves?
Yes.
Or no, are they two separate ones?
Ask Jeeves became Ask the company, Ask.com, the company, which Jeeves, surprisingly has like a big corporate office building and makes money somehow and probably through all those toolbars.
Yeah.
Don't ask.
Yeah. Don't tell.
Yeah, so, you know, search engines. Hooray.
There used to be more. Now there's not as many.
I was digging through some stuff in my closet, and I found...
Some ketchup invites?
Shut up.
Yay!
I found...
a domain you didn't use anymore?
I found that. No, I found a messenger bag from mp3.com.
That's really... Where'd you get that? Like, at a conference, or...?
I've had that since, like, the 90s.
Wow. It's come around. You need to break that out.
Yeah, did they send it to you?
When you go to a conference, you need to wear that.
Did they send it to the ISP? Or, like, I mean, how did you physically come into possession of an
MP3.com?
Yeah. This was after they rebranded, right? And they were, like... Because there was a time when they were, like, just doing reviews of, you know, like, MP3 players and all the newest stuff. And then there was a time, I guess, when they went corporate and tried to make some money. So I wonder if it wasn't during that corporate push.
It had to have been swag that they were giving away to promote the company. And back in the heady days, in the early heady days of the internet, I would come across stuff. People would give me stuff. I like, you know, ton of Cisco polo shirts that don't fit anymore. But the messenger bag. And this was like before messenger bags kind of got cool too. So it's
fill it up with stolen music and you're set.
I can fill it up with MP3s, you know. It holds more than my iPod. A bag from MP3.com filled with old iPods.
Oh yeah, there we go.
Or something. Or Zunes.
Zunes. Plays for sure.
Yeah, and I've got an AltaVista dress shirt that I forgot that I had. Speaking of old,
like a button down, kind of
like a button down. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You didn't have to search for it.
I
you know where it is.
It was. Yeah, I found it. So here I am.
Can we not give Lee so much sugar right before the show?
All right.
I need more caffeine.
Do you? Are you
sure? I need an infusion from Lee. I need something. Yeah.
Drink his blood.
No,
I'm barely hanging in there. And Lee's got like energy for days.
Need my blood. I'm using it.
Oh, you know what it is? It's the giddiness of having a brand new, huge Dell test Ubuntu.
It is. It is.
It just works.
You don't have. There's no visual component to this radio show. But sitting in front of me is a loaner laptop from Dell, a big M3800 that I'm reviewing for my day job. They came preloaded with Ubuntu 14.04.
So it's somewhere between the size of like a 15-inch and like an aircraft carrier?
Yeah, it's kind of aircraft carrier size.
It's thin.
It's very thin. It's got a 4K display. In fact, one of the things that I'm
that's why it costs so much.
Yeah. It's got a 4K display and a Quadro video card, which is why it's so expensive. Yeah, one of the things I'm going to look at is how Ubuntu on the desktop does scaling for 4K displays, because it's not, you know, a 40-inch laptop. It's like a, you know, 15 or 17 inch laptop, and obviously it scales, and on the desktop side of things, Ubuntu hasn't traditionally done that, or any of the desktop Linuxes haven't really done that as well as Windows does.
Well, do you think they got some help from Dell? Do you think Dell came in and tweaked some things on the distribution?
Well, who's the video card manufacturer?
It's NVIDIA.
It's going to be NVIDIA, probably.
Just as far as the cool thing on this is, you know, a lot of it, you go and you install Linux on a laptop. Generally, it takes a little bit of tweaking to get, like, you know, all the dim lights and, you know, like all the command buttons on the top row. They're usually found on laptops. It takes a little bit of tweaking, but these work just right out of the box, which was pretty cool. The dim.
Well, they've done some work. They call this their developer edition program. And so this is if you want to be, it's a pretty hefty laptop. It's got a 256 gig SSD. It's got 16 gigs of RAM. It's a quad core i7 with hyper threading, and it's got this 4K display and the fancy video card. I mean, you could do some serious DevOps with this thing if you're a DevOps kind of guy.
We cut it out as proc CP info, and we should have used more. The CPUs just kept going.
The cores just kept going.
Are you gonna? Is part of your review to actually develop something on it?
No.
No.
He's going to develop an opinion of how well Dell does Linux.
It'd be like, how well do I remember enough C to see if I can make Hello World appear?
Lift with your back. No, that's bad advice. Lift with your legs. You don't want to develop a hernia or anything. Back problem.
It's kind of heavy. It's pretty hefty. Yes, you may. You can touch it.
Here's the scary thing. That's not much heavier than like what a really lightweight portable laptop would have been like 6 or 7 years ago, but after carrying like, I kind of remember the studio has Airs or something as light.
Yeah,
that's like a function of age, and I just can't lift. You know, maybe I should lift. Maybe if I carried like an old, you know, like an HP, I could.
So what they've done in the computer world is they've basically given us an opportunity to sit for long periods of time, but then when we do get up and lift something, it's just light.
No workout. Yeah.
Well, you know,
so there's really no physical challenges to being a nerd at all.
Whether you love Apple or hate Apple, it's impossible to deny that over the past, you know, 5-ish years, the industrial design that they've put forward on laptops like the Air and the MacBook Pro has influenced the entire portable industry very much for the better, because, you know, ultrabooks are now a well-established category. Laptops like the Dell's XPS 13, which is the ultrabook version that Dell sells, are actually super nice. Lenovo's got their Carbon X1, which is just a super nice. You know, it's not quite a. It's bigger than an ultrabook.
No, not to say anything bad about this Dell, but this Dell looks very, especially with the clamshell and the sloping and the way they've hidden the bottom bezel. It looks a little bit like the new MacBook Pros. You know, with the bezel. I mean, that's the whole style everyone's going to.
It absolutely does. And
you look at the lines. If you cover up that Dell on the top, and you know, if you have a little Apple thing on there, it would be hard pressed to spot it.
It's definitely. It's got an aluminum shell. I can feel it. It doesn't have their Apple's unibody structure, I don't think, but it's. You know, it's aluminum. I heard a funny thing about about Apple and aluminum several years ago when they shifted to their unibody construction on the MacBooks. Because, you know, the thing with the MacBooks, their unibody construction, the bottom part of it is actually machined out of a solid chunk of aluminum. It's a single billet that gets milled down. And Apple, because of that and because of the shift to aluminum on the iPads and a bunch of other stuff, at one point Apple owned like 2/3 of the world's supply of CNC, of aluminum CNC milling machines. Like, Apple had purchased them, and they were churning out Apple-related products. So think
We've
about
ran
that.
Ran out. We're going to have to buy aluminium now.
Aluminium. If you're Johnny Ive.
British, go to, source it from Britain.
Actually, Johnny Ive says aluminum. I think they've
He's trying to be kind of, he's all Cupertino-fied. He's Americanized. He just pulls out the accent when he wants to impress girls.
They pay him enough to say aluminum. Yeah. He's like, all right, I could do that.
I bet you could schedule a meeting with him, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I can. Yeah. Johnny Ives on speed dial for me. I just call him right up all the time.
Oh, versus schedule. I bet he's that's what I'm
saying. Oh, I see. I could schedule a meeting. Indeed. Indubitably.
So that's pretty nice. It's got a nice little wrist rest. And this is the thing I like about it is it has, if people remember, like the old... was it like the IBM ThinkPad, like the T-Series, and even like some of the A-Series, where you could just almost like palm it like a basketball because the stuff was so non-slippery. It's like that. It's got a good kind of solid feel to it.
It's a nice laptop, you know. And I mean, there's a lot of OEMs that are making junk these days, but and when you look at the high-end stuff that Dell's turning out, that Lenovo's turning out, they're good. They're making quality stuff now, and I think that's... You know, I'm glad for the added competition in the portable space because it forces these OEMs to excel rather than to churn out garbage.
Well, something happened for a while there. There was a time when you could walk into, you know, your computer store of choice and just, you know, like trip over the, you know, netbooks for a couple $100. And the ones on sale, you know, I mean, I picked up a lot of just, you know, friends going to DEF CON. a little burner, 100 and some odd change, you know, little 10.1 inch thing. But those have just dried up and disappeared. I don't see that many of them anymore.
Netbooks are over, kind of as a category. They had kind of a brief reign. And then, I mean, arguably, Ultrabooks succeeded them.
Arguably three times as much there in cases.
Arguably for
that's
three
the
times
thing, you know?
As much.
Well, good luck finding one. I mean, there's a $500 price point out there for, you know, what can be considered an ultrabook.
Yeah.
But that, you know, ultra cheap, you know, I don't mind if it's a little bit clunky, but get the job done. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was after. And those, you know.
Yeah, you don't really find them anymore. And I think because they appealed, for the most part, they appealed to a very specific buyer. One who was technically sophisticated, didn't mind being his own tech support, was probably going to put Linux on the thing anyway. And also didn't need something that had, you know, that was very performant. You know,
well, people that knew what they were getting, I guess, that knew enough to know what they were getting into, not expecting miracles from this little bitty, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you
little engine that maybe might.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But it didn't stick around as a category, and you don't really see them anymore. I mean, I guess you could probably find them if you want to go, you know, hunting on, you know, weird fourth string.
Yeah, I bet
overseas,
like China,
Asian
you could get
OEMs,
them, or
yeah.
Japanese stuff, you could get them. But just the main thing for me was the price point. It was the price point with enough horsepower to make it actually usable.
Yeah, and you're not really going to find that anything else.
So
what
did you get?
Yay!
Oh,
Peter.
There he is. Well, I didn't get anything. I've purchased nothing. This is a review unit that Dell sent me, but it's an M3800 developer edition. So it's preloaded with Ubuntu and it's pre-scaled, so its 4K display is the right DPI for human eyeballs to see, not freaky tiny alien eyeballs, and it's a super nice little machine.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say a little.
No, it is like I said, yeah.
It's a laptop for crying out loud.
It is a full on laptop.
It is a laptop. It's not like a, you know, a desktop with a 24-inch.
It's a laptop
display.
For people with ample laps.
It's a lot of laptop.
I think that might bridge my lap.
Yes, it's
maybe not anymore.
It's a developer's rig, you say?
Yeah, yeah. It's the idea is it's a portable workstation, and in this case, it's a portable workstation with Linux on it.
Would it be suitable for gaming?
I don't know. It's got the Quadro video card. So
developer edition is wink wink suitable for gaming.
Yeah.
Because most development stacks these days they don't. I mean, unless you're running some VMs, that could definitely come into play. But you know, a lot of the development stacks, it's like you don't need all that much power.
Well,
but if you're a developer and you're like, hey, I need that much power.
But the thing is, with the where you'll get stuck is with the video card drivers, because the Quadro drivers are different. I mean, it's NVIDIA's Quadro stuff. You know this. It's basically the consumer hardware, but it's got like two or three little differences, and then the drive. Power saving kicked on. I was like, what happened? Everything just went dim.
You have a Linux laptop that works. I know it's surprising, but just try and control.
But with the Quadro video drivers, NVIDIA puts effort into certifying them with certain applications, and they're not tuned for gaming. They're tuned for, you know, being able to work with, you know, whatever the CAD application of choice is, or whatever the 3D modeling application of your
choice
is.
It's workstation, not game station.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think you can take, like, the regular NVIDIA gaming video card drivers and get in there and like edit the INI file and put the PCI ID for this video card into the INI file and force them to install and then play just fine. But I mean, yeah, and I guess the kind of buyer who would go after this kind of thing would be happy to do that.
Yeah, or just boot into Steam, maybe.
Install your Steam OS. Which have they? I don't even know if they've been
USB 3.
They've been releasing updates to that
thumb drive, and yeah, I think they have. Well, who knows? Who knows? And I know someone else is releasing. I think it's a called. Someone else is coming out with a gaming box, and it escapes me. It's one word. Pete, do you know when they use? I will find out.
You should find out.
I will use Google Foo.
Was Pete still with us?
I'm still there.
Okay.
He's here.
All right. So we got sidetracked by Shiny coming into the studio with Lee.
It's called the Shield. So,
oh, that's well,
oh, no,
that's
no,
Nvidia's,
that's a TV console.
That's
a TV console.
Thing.
Yeah, although it's going to be it's a gaming console too. So it looks like they're trying to take over the living room, but instead of pitching it as a gaming console, they're pitching it as like
the Shield is a tablet.
TV Android console.
If it's Nvidia, the Shield is a is
well, okay, that's not the Shield
tablet.
Then. It's something else. Let me keep searching for names.
All right, well,
it's the like Steam Box, isn't it? Or
it's along the lines of Steam. It's not the Steam Box though. It's a new contender.
All right, so we got Pete on the line. We got all that worked out. And why don't we go ahead and do the info shot, and we'll let Lee continue to familiarize himself with his laptop.
I'm just going to sit here and stroke the laptop. I'm stroking it. The laptop. The laptop.
Like a Bond villain.
So, Mr. Technology Mate.
Like a type in hairless cat.
Do you expect me to do the info shot? Yes. Yes, Mr. Hughes.
No,
I expect you to do the info
you
shot.
To die.
No, actually, just the info shot would be fine.
Yes. All right, take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, I still needed to open up the files for tonight. And one thing that's going to be different tonight on the show, at least in a few minutes, once I get a chance to, we'll post the links to all the articles, you know, for Try By or Fry and Weird Science and the news headlines, so that then you can look at them and read them and stuff. And maybe if you have something to comment on them, you can call in and participate. Meanwhile, of course, there's, you know, as every week, there's always security issues, huh? But this one is like, it's a decade old. This is kind of a frustrating one. Security experts have discovered a potentially catastrophic flaw that for more than a decade has made it possible for attackers to decrypt HTTPS protected traffic passing between Android or Apple devices and hundreds of thousands or millions of websites, including, you know, sites like AmericanExpress.com, Bloomberg.com, NSA.gov. In recent days, a scan of more than 14 million websites that support the Secure Sockets Layer or Transport Layer Security Protocols, TLS, found that more than 36% of them were vulnerable to the decryption attacks. The exploit takes about 7 hours to carry out and costs as little as $100 per site. It's called the Freak Attack, short for Factoring Attack on RSA Export Keys, is possible when an end user with a vulnerable device, currently known to include Android smartphones, iPhones, Macs running OS X, when they connect to a vulnerable HTTPS-protected website, vulnerable sites. So those are to use a weak cipher that many had presumed had been retired long ago. At the time that this article that I found was written, most Windows and Linux end-user devices were not believed to be affected. So the deal is, let's see, Freak is one of several SSL-related vulnerabilities disclosed Tuesday by a research team from organizations including INRIA Paris Roquencourt, that's French, obviously, and Microsoft. I'm sure they loved revealing that it was a Google and Apple set of vulnerabilities. The vulnerability is indexed as CVE-2015-0204, and Apple spokesman said the company plans to issue patches for iOS and OS X next week. A Google spokeswoman said an Android patch has already been distributed to partners. So meanwhile, of course, that means that Verizon and a lot of these other places have the patch and haven't put it out to your phone. So remember that if you get your SSL traffic hacked. The deal is it's 512-bit keys is part of this vulnerability, and they are a vestige of the 1990s when the Clinton administration required weak keys to be used in any software or hardware that was exported out of the U.S. To satisfy the requirement, many manufacturers designed products that offered commercial-grade keys when used in the U.S. and export-grade keys when used elsewhere. But somehow the ciphers have managed to live on a select but significant number of end user devices and servers. You can find, if you do a search on the Freak SSL exploit, you can find a list of the vulnerabilities. It's virtually all Android devices and iPhones and Macs. Ars Technica has received reports from two people that BlackBerry 10.3.1.2267 is also vulnerable. IE11 apparently is also the Windows technical preview. According to some people, IE11 in the Windows technical preview also tests as vulnerable to the attack. So we'll keep an eye on this one. Obviously, people were, as word of the vulnerability spread, many website operators were scrambling to reconfigure their servers so they could no longer be downgraded to the easily broken export ciphers. But as you know, earlier today when this article was written, sites including NSA.gov, WhiteHouse.gov, and FBI.gov, including the page the FBI uses to accept confidential tips, were all affected. In other news, some other Android news, and this ties into the whole encryption thing, Google has backed away from an early promise to enable full disk encryption by default on all Lollipop devices. Android users can still switch on disk encryption in the settings menu, but contrary to what Google said when Lollipop was first released, it won't be the default setting. According to an official statement, the issue seems to be device performance. Oops. Due to performance issues on some Android partner devices, we are not yet at encryption by default on every new Lollipop device, Google said in a statement to Engadget. We remain firmly committed to encryption because it helps keep users safe and secure on the web. This one shows up the problem between Google's plans for Android and the often limited capabilities of its hardware partners. Google's own Nexus devices already use encryption by default, and while many have observed performance penalties as a result, the devices have been able to pick up the slack. But the, quote, performance issues, unquote, suggest that not all Android devices are ready to take on the extra load of default decryption. There's still an option for disk encryption on Android devices with Jelly Bean or higher, but users have to enable it themselves. And if they start to notice a slowdown, you know, in performance, they may be inclined to switch back. So, you know, it's one of those good news where they want to make it all encrypted so your stuff is safer. And then bad news is a lot of hardware that won't handle it. In other Google news, since they seem to be they seem to have a lot going on this week, Google is looking to change how they rank websites. You know, before they were using links to a site to kind of determine which way, you know, what was popular and use that to, as part of their ranking algorithm. But one of the problems they have is all of the garbage on the internet, you know, things like anti-vaccination websites that make the front page of Google. And fact-free, quote, news stories that spread like wildfire. Google has devised a fix, which is ranking websites according to their truthfulness. Kind of interesting. Google's search engine currently uses the number of incoming links to a web page as a proxy for quality, determining where it appears in search results. So pages that lots of other sites link to are ranked higher. This system has brought us the search engine as we know it today, but the downside is a website with the right keywords and links can rise up the rankings if enough people, you know, link to it. Google research team is adapting that model to measure the trustworthiness of a page rather than its reputation across the web. Instead of counting incoming links, the system, which is not yet live, counts the number of incorrect facts within a page. A source that has few false facts is considered to be trustworthy, said the team. The score they compute for each page is its knowledge-based trust score. Now, getting the facts thing, apparently the software works by tapping into the knowledge vault, the vast store of facts that Google has pulled off the internet. I think I could see an issue or problem with this fact ranking thing already. Now, facts the web unanimously agrees on are considered a reasonable proxy for truth. Web pages that contain contradictory information are bumped down the rankings. So could be interesting to see how that goes, you know, because obviously if, you know, there's some benefit to knowing that the links you're finding, you know, if you're searching for something are high up. But what happens if everybody – what happens if a majority of people are wrong about something? Then I guess you might have to dig a little farther in the Google search results to get your stuff. And a couple other quick hits before sort of our top story. This one we didn't talk about a lot. We've talked about Bitcoin and about you know, the new cryptocurrencies, but we didn't really talk a lot about Mt. Gox. It's the one-year anniversary of one of the biggest catastrophes to hit Bitcoin, which is the day Mt. Gox went bust. Once it was the world's biggest market for the digital currency, the Tokyo-based exchange collapsed on February 28th, 2014. with $63 million in liabilities, said it was unable to account for some 850,000 bitcoins worth nearly $500 million at the time. They don't know if it was lost or if it was stolen by hackers who exploited a bug in the Bitcoin system. The size of the supposed heist and its dollar value shrank considerably last year. 200,000 coins turned up in an old format Bitcoin wallet last March, bringing the tally to 650,000. And with the drop in the value of Bitcoin, with being about half of what it was a year ago, the missing coins are now worth about $180 million. There's still no explanation of what happened to them and no clear record of what happened on the exchange. There was an anonymous report last year by a Bitcoin researcher based on leaked trading logs chronicled the activities of trading bots that apparently ran amok in the Mt. Gox system, indicating massive fraudulent trading. But Tokyo-based Bitcoin security firm WizSec issued a report last month that supports some of the findings of the anonymous study, concluding that a bot dubbed Willy operated over several trading accounts and was able to trade at times when the exchange was not available to other users. But the WizSec report, which was cautious about not jeopardizing other investigations, said more study of Willy is needed to understand its purpose. So there's the thing about, you know, the crypto coin thing is it's only as trustworthy as the weakest link, I guess. So that's one of those things to be careful for. Careful as you do this stuff, even if the the Winklevoss twins are involved, it's no guarantee that it's going to that there's not going to be some kind of exploit. And there's coming up soon, you know, that everybody's been wondering, or a lot of people have been wondering about the Apple Watch. There is going to be a March 9th Apple Watch event that's been announced. So that's for real and is going to happen. So that's going to happen. And so that's before our show. So we'll be able to talk about it next, we'll be able to talk about it next time. We'll be able to talk about the Apple Watch. But now into the realm of rumor, there's the possibility that the 12-inch Retina MacBook Air could be announced during that same event, according to one site that claims to have sources within Apple. It's called the Michael Report. Believes Apple will use the event to debut the ultra-thin MacBook, which is rumored to have a Retina display and a redesigned chassis. So we'll keep an eye on that one. And then a sort of top story. This, I don't know if you visit Wired.com or not, but they came out with their new design this week. They reworked their whole site. Apparently they went from multiple different systems and multiple different WordPress installs to everything at Wired running on one WordPress install, on a single WordPress setup. And they also went for responsive design. And the idea behind that is before, apparently they had a separate system that presented content to mobile devices and tablets, and then that was a separate system from the one that presented stuff to desktop size screens or desktop devices. So they started with the just according to their article, they said that they came up with they're going to they use they're using a card based motif, and for that using that for their design. Then they found ways to expand the design to other screens, desktop, laptop, tablet, and anywhere else you would access Wired. They changed their photographs to be Retina ready. So on your like iPad Air or your Retina screen or your 4K screen would probably trigger the Retina stuff. Graphics are SVG sprites. Their new structure allows them to deploy Wired's look and improve the overall typographic fidelity of their layouts, they say. And they apparently seriously streamlined their code. There's another post from their director of engineering talking about it. But the big thing they said is that apparently now the site loads twice as fast. They said their tech team stripped out over half the browser calls, drastically reducing the need for the browser to repaint web pages. As a result, articles now load perceptibly faster. Apparently, image galleries and videos appear on demand, and they even moved to some other servers. But I noticed as during the week, I saw some Twitter comments from Lee that he was not a fan of the new wired look. Are you there, Lee?
We're all muted.
We're
here.
Waiting for the red light.
Waiting for the red light to come back on. And now the red light is back. Now we can speak again.
Yeah, the voices are back.
So I'm not a fan of that kind of card based layout. So the developer named Jeff Atwood, very famous internet personality guy. Jeff Atwood goes by the moniker of Coding Horror. I stole his phrase for that layout, and he calls it not just wired specifically, just referring to that kind of sort of ragged tile based Pinterest style layout as Pinterest cancer. So I was tweeting that Wired had caught Pinterest cancer. It's a cruddy layout if it's a page that you visit regularly and you want to like sort of keep track of what's happened, and because you can't scan it, there's no eye line, you don't know where to look, the tiles are all different sizes and they can be reflowed as new items are published. It's just a pain in the butt and I hate it.
Do not like. Yeah. I hadn't been out there. I'm not a fan of it.
It's like
that, I don't like the new 2D thing, and people are going like 2D in the wrong direction. Like I get like, okay, you can drop the, you know, circa 1997, you know, neon effects and drop shadows and stuff like that. But this is a little bit too logo.
Now, if you drag it, it's responsive. And for folks who don't quite know what we're talking about with responsive, a responsive layout means as you resize the browser window, the elements on the page will resize themselves as the window drags. Not just like how usual HTML does, where like lines of text will reflow, but like the entire window itself, the contents of the window itself will shrink or grow. Elements will rearrange themselves. And the idea is to have one website that looks good on any screen, including all the way down to mobile.
Takes a little bit of work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not, you can't just throw it out and have it work.
From the development side. Yeah. From an HTML5 perspective, though, hopefully once that gets a little more widely adopted, the responsive design will be a little bit easier to pull off.
Yeah. One thing that's odd to me about it is, on responsive design is like Twitter Bootstrap. We may get a little off into the weeds of, internet design, but anybody who's had a website or had one designed has probably had some of these conversations. It looks to me like they, on like Twitter Bootstrap, their widest screen size is about a 1200 pixel wide content area. And it looks to me like Wired stopped at more of the kind of the old school, like 960 pixel wide, for the widest content zone.
Well, maybe they did.
It seems odd to me because I've dragged the window wider and it stays at the, it basically floats in the middle, but it stays at that kind of, I get part of it is that's about the size of a sheet of paper. So it may be that that's why they decided that. But it seems to me that, it's like, part of responsive, just it should work going smaller, but it should also work for bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it does to a certain point.
I mean, the thing is, at that point, I mean, you're gonna, no one's gonna want to design for such huge monitors. Most people, especially with the cinema style displays that are being pushed on laptops and even like home monitors now, they're just assuming you're gonna line up browsers. You're not just gonna like blow up and go full screen on the browser and be able to see everything.
Right. Well, on a HD screen that's 1980 by 1920 by 1080, so the 1200 pixels isn't even taking is taking a little over than half of that, and so it just that's why it's odd to me that they went with kind of a smaller size than they could have as far as the design. I think part of it's with the boxes, they didn't want to have another column.
Yeah, I mean, layouts for a site that is as big as Wired are always going to be kind of political decisions more than anything else, right? I mean, everybody's got to have – you've got your brand considerations. Wired is going through kind of a brand reinvention, and this is part of it. So yeah, I mean, they wanted a site that reflects their brand. And just for disclosure, Wired is a sister property of Ars Technica, the company the website that I write for. We're all owned by Condé Nast.
Could you call them and have them roll back?
Yes.
Okay. I'll take some slower.
I could, but I choose not to.
I'll go get a cup of coffee while the page loads if it means I get to come back to something I want to look at.
No.
Reactivate all the old servers. Start back up the other WordPress installs.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other thing too, is that they run WordPress on their back end, and Ars Technica does too. We've been on WordPress for a couple of years now, and I think you're starting to see that on a lot of there are tons of sites that use WordPress that you wouldn't think use WordPress. It is especially now that mm-hmm. they're in the latter part of the 3 release, the 3.8 and the 3.9, and now they're in the 4.1, I think, is their current revision. Yeah. It's just a heck of an extensible system if you don't mind dealing with PHP.
But there are a lot of kits out there, and what's surprising me is that I'm seeing larger and larger companies instead of, you know, what used to be traditional, you know, in-house design where they would kind of do everything from the ground up. They're using kits like that. You know, companies that really maybe shouldn't be on that because some of these things don't scale that well. I mean, you still have some underlying factors and they make it work. You know, for instance, Facebook makes PHP work, but they have to go in. They've got to extend the language. They've got to do a lot of special things.
They have
their
own interpreter. They use the HHVM thing, I think, these days.
Yeah, so I mean, they're doing a lot of tricks behind the scene to be able to get PHP to handle those loads. They're doing a lot of, and they're writing in PHP, but they're doing compiling and they're doing a whole lot of stuff. So it's just...
Yeah, in fact, their interpreter, their hip-hop virtual machine interpreter, is a just-in-time microcode producer thing. Is it a microcode thingy? It's a JIT thing, and it's really cool. Now we're getting way off into the weeds. Anyways, mm-hmm. but yeah, these kind of content management systems, I mean, WordPress is probably the most popular, but there's Drupal, there's Joomla.
Yeah, Drupal's out there.
WordPress now, and if you read what Matt Mulway is writing, they're working hard to be more of a content management system. Mm-hmm. From my point of view, they aren't there yet. You know, it's one of those where there was a big bandwagon effect. I think the deal is that a lot of developers figured out, well, hey, you know, any idiot can write a post on WordPress. So if I put the website on there, then I can hand it off to the end client and they can be taught enough to manage some of their own stuff and put their own stuff on it.
If you're going to use, if you, the third person you, if generic you is going to use WordPress as a CMS, it's totally doable, provided you have at least one PHP developer full-time on staff who you can, you know, pay to write the plugins that you need, do the integration you have to do, and keep it, you know, fed and up-to-date and operational. It's perfectly functional if you can, like, have a guy who does it for you.
So it seems to me that's kind of like saying, you know, hey, this car I'm going to sell you could be a bus if you've got a mechanic and a welder and 4 tons of sheet metal and, you know, kind of thing. It just clearly they're leveraging, you know, they got a huge installed base for blogging, and then people started, you know, they made a plugin interface where you could expand on it, and then you know, one of the problems for Joomla was Joomla was sort of designed to be too corporate, especially back when it was Mambo and early Joomla, where it was, you know, there was like 5 layers of publisher, editor, administrator, that kind of stuff. And people, you know, most people using it, it's like there was one person who managed all the content.
Right.
And so them wearing 5 different hats and having the different accounts and all that stuff was kind of silly. But no, it just the I full disclosure. I mean, I've written my own content management system that I'm trying to expand, and sometime some geek gathering I'll show it to you, Lee. I don't want to say more until it's more done. I mean, it works. I've got it. It's powering 40 or 50 websites that I've done, but it doesn't do everything that it needs to do yet. But it's built to be a content management system from the start. And so, you know, I have been into content management systems since I started thinking about that and about, hey, how come you can't put the content in a database? I had that conversation with a developer in 1995.
So it was around
nobody
your
was talking
when...
about that then. No, everybody was it was HTML pages and all that kind of stuff. And the sad part is there wasn't languages like PHP. You really had to be a like hardcore coder to be able to do CGI for CGI and not that's not computer graphics to do CGI
right.
programming
games, yeah.
to make stuff happen that was dynamic on a web page. So, but I dealt with content management at various, I've dealt with it on the enterprise level too. Which the funny part is there were products like Vignette, which nobody, they used to run kind of everything. I know they may still run CNET. I don't know, but that they were developed to be a content management system for CNET. And then it spun off and it got bigger than CNET for a while. And then it fell apart because they were charging $250,000 a server for a content management system in quotes. And the problem was it was when you bought it, because I worked with a Fortune 100 company that wanted to buy it, that wanted to buy the product and use it. For a content management system, it really didn't do – it was a framework is all it was. It didn't – it would not present you with page one of content out of the box. You had to build everything and it was all in Java. So you had to build all these JSP pages to make the thing work. So it was sort of so of course they've gone the way of the dodo. I think it's because of that. WordPress, I guess that one of the things I definitely would say in its favor is, you install WordPress and you go to the URL and there's something there to see without having to have a squad of developers work for 6 months to develop it. But I saw when we were choosing the CMS at it was a major financial institution. We saw the presentations from all the different places, and there was one that everybody who like worked with the content really loved. And then because they thought they would get a free copy of a search engine with Vignette, they spent $500,000 on licenses and then another – God, I think they spent another $1 million on servers because they would get a free search engine.
Best Buy was one of the companies that's running on WordPress that I was completely surprised at when
really?
I looked. Yeah,
are they really running it?
Yeah, they're actually, and it's not like their blog. So, for instance, PlayStation, they've got their blog on there. eBay has their blog on there. So there's some large companies that are doing cool stuff that are running blogs on this. But I was really surprised when I hit up Best Buy and you looked at the source. And I'm like, that's WordPress. And sure enough, yeah, they're out the eighth. No, what are they? The 11th largest company to be using WordPress.
Like for their web front store?
Yeah, for their web front end. That's so like when crazy. You go and you like get the number to the store and you go and see where the map is and you go do all that is WordPress.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah,
hours. But again, I mean, that's so far away from off-the-shelf WordPress. That's a whole IT department worth of customized
right.
stuff.
And you've also got Xerox and Bata and ESPN. And Nokia is on there. Actually, Nokia is just doing conversations for it, social. So the majority of the large Fortune 50 companies are using it, but for the most part, they're using it in a blog kind of, one-directional kind of way.
Yeah, with their own developers supporting it anyway.
Yeah, to throw in a Star Trek reference, I think there's as much relationship between WordPress and their public sites as there is between Voyager and V'ger, if you saw Star Trek 1. Somewhere in the middle of this planet-sized thing, there's a little box that's the WordPress code, and all this huge stuff around it is all the things that were built to make it do whatever it was that the corporation wanted
all right,
to have.
Well, let's not bore everybody to death with CMS talk. What else can we babble about now?
We can depress people now that we bored them. We can depress them with the news that we've lost the most famous Vulcan, my favorite Vulcan.
Oh, yes, of course.
And he did a lot of stuff.
Good segue into Star Trek there, Pete. Thank you.
Suspension building.
Yes.
And what was it? Was it In Search Of? Did he also do the voice?
Oh, Leonard Nimoy is In Search Of.
Yeah, he did some really cool stuff even after Star Trek. Because Star Trek, the original series, had a very short run. It didn't stick around, but, three and, change, if that long. But I remember him mostly.
Two
and change. And maybe did he also do Nova? Did he ever do any voiceovers? He did a lot of cool stuff. When I was a kid, I would go to the public library and you could get video cassettes and you would check them out and play them. And I watched all this cool stuff about, you know, In Search of UFOs and In Search of Stonehenge and In Search of the Bermuda Triangle. And it was always Nimoy.
And he did
the cool stuff. Yeah.
I know he did for a little while. I remember growing up on Nickelodeon, he did like a lights, camera, action movie show for a long time where he did like Leonard Nimoy's movie reviews.
Now, Jay posted this on some social media. I was kind of, someone else was kind of waiting to see who would be the first one to do it. But he also had a, I don't know why I would call it like a rocketing folk career, but he cut a record or two with
James
T. Kirk.
Are we going to talk about?
No, he did. So there was one called Inflicted. You know, it was like music to watch Space Girls go by. And I think I bought the record.
Did you? Did it come with the Bilbo Baggins single?
No, I think I got that as a bonus. But yeah, the Bilbo Baggins, the Legend of Bilbo Baggins, or what was that? What's the?
Yeah, the Bilbo Baggins
yeah.
song.
The Ballad of Bilbo.
Ballad of, yeah, that's it. Ballad of
Ballad
Bilbo Baggins.
Ballad of Bilbo
yeah.
Baggins.
First, looks like his first cinematic appearance was an uncredited role as an army sergeant in a movie called Them.
Oh, the Ant movie.
The Ant movie, yes.
Oh, and I know he did. Didn't he do The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or something?
Yeah, he
like
played.
That?
He played every when I was a kid, and the first few times I saw him out of a non-Star Trek role, it was very weird for me. Like I had to kind of make that right with the world. Like, where is he? Ears? Why is Spock upset?
Well, why is he smiling?
Would laugh. When he would laugh in other roles,
and he
it
did
was on, it was just
Dragnet.
Sort of odd.
Dragnet.
That's what it was. Dragnet, yeah, the Dragnet.
Yeah. And he didn't he do at least one either Outer Limits or Twilight Zone with Shatner?
Sea Hunt.
Sea Hunt.
Don't make the
here we go. So he did actually he put out five different studio albums. So the one that I bought was Leonard Nimoy Presents Mr. Spock's Music from Outer Space. That was obviously when he first, you know, Star Trek was hitting, people kind of knew who
illogical.
He was.
I find it highly
and
illogical.
Then he went to and he said, okay, we gotta do some feeling, but that'd be illogical. So let's do the two sides of Leonard Nimoy, and that must have been the Spock side and maybe, you know, grassier, rootsier side.
I can just see this like some.
First Leonard Nimoy album I ever got was the one that had him singing. He was in a Nehru shirt on the cover, the only song I remember from that album was "If I Had a Hammer."
Oh yeah.
Was this like the idea from some like cigar chomping music exec? Leonard, baby, we've got to get you singing.
There's
this
a story
gonna
arc
be
here.
A killer album.
We got a story arc with the five set discography.
Oh, right. Okay.
So we
yes.
go two sides of Leonard Nimoy. Okay, so we've got a duality here. We split, you know, and this is, I'm sure there were some episodes where we actually split. You know, there was the feeling, loving, you know, Spock and the other one. And then he totally, so apparently Nimoy killed Spock because third album was The Way I Feel. Totally went
right
the,
around
the way that I
now.
Feel. The way that I feel.
The way I feel, according to the official discography.
That's the one that had If I Had a Hammer on it.
Yes, yeah, that's the one you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is must have been
now,
when
it gets
I
a
am
little,
not Spock.
Little creepy. Now, the next one, depending on how you interpret it, could be whatever. I will just say it's called The Touch of Leonard Nimoy.
Show us where Leonard Nimoy touched you.
And then, of course, it's, you know, well, depending on how that goes, it could be the new world of Leonard Nimoy. And that was the fifth one. That's where it ended. Apparently,
I like
maybe
the duality of Leonard Nimoy, the book I Am Not Spock, then the Give Up book versus I Am
Spock.
Okay.
I didn't read the original one, but I read the I Am Spock one. And I mean, basically, it was a lot of soul searching and him coming to terms with the fact that the role doesn't have to define his life, but it's done so many good things for him that, you know, it's okay to allow the character of Spock to exist, like, in his mind and to identify with it. But, I mean, yeah, he went through a period where he was just very violently against all that. I mean, with good reason, too, because it was essentially, with a few little exceptions, it was essentially the end of his, you know,
acting career. His,
well, yeah, it was essentially.
He couldn't play anything else without anybody
else.
Saying that Spock.
Yeah, exactly.
He was in an episode of Get Smart prior to Star Trek. This is all prior to Star Trek. Get Smart.
Think of Wesley Crusher, though.
Well, now
that's
he's
a different
had,
thing. He
he's
to
had
embrace,
like a total
yeah.
renaissance with yeah. his entire public persona. Will Wheaton went from being, you know, the subject of his very own Usenet newsgroup alt.wesley.crusher.die.die.die all the way up to, I mean, now he is beloved. You know, he's
gaming.
In demand. I'd hang out with Will Wheaton. He's awesome.
He's embraced his geekiness is what's happened.
Yeah,
and he's gotten into the right people. He's gotten, you know, in front of the gamers. He's, you know, he's done what he could do. And he did the whole judo thing because judo thing. I kind of liked him when I was a kid because I was younger than him. when I was watching Star Trek, but I know he annoyed a lot of people. Like most people, like you said, you know, alt.die.die.die that was out there. That's how most people felt about him. But he did manage to turn that around.
Well,
in
it wasn't
a way
his
a lot
fault
of people
either. I mean, that was, you know, that's
he
the way
was
the character
because he
written.
Was. But mainly because every other kid that hated him wished they could be that kid on Star Trek.
Well, and he said in more than one interview, and in fact, if you go to his blog and read some of his entries about like the time he spent on Star Trek, he said more than once on there that I basically just screwed that entire time of my life away. You know, I should have realized, oh my God, look at this opportunity. This is amazing. I'm working with these incredible people. We're making the show that even if it seems a little cheesy, I know it's going to be great. But really, he said that for like the entire time he was on the show, he was basically acting and felt internally like, you know, like most teenagers would feel like, this is stupid. I hate being here. I don't want to do this.
So the thing I've never asked him that I was always kind of curious about is like, you know, it's a chicken and egg kind of thing, but you know what? Made who did was the current geeky Will Wheaton made because you took a normal Will Wheaton and you put him through the Wesley Crusher process, then he had to deal with all the Star Trek stuff.
The Crusher
and he
crucible.
Finally just gave in. Just some night he said, "All right, guys, I guess
Spock.
I'll card game."
I am Spock.
Yeah. Or so I don't think at that age, if he just kind of flitted through that, it doesn't sound like he was geeky. And he's like, "I am setting out to go beyond Star Trek, and that's my live stream." It sounds like he was just kind of cast and thrown in.
He bailed on the show. He quit essentially. Yeah.
Well, that's how they had to do the whole Traveler write out really quick. Like,
well,
how can we get him out of there?
That
okay,
was complicated.
We know how
yeah.
we can do
now
that.
Now I'm inclined to go find the episode of the show that Leonard Nimoy showed up on an episode of T.J. Hooker.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
As Lieutenant Paul McGuire, the first officer, I guess.
Was T.J. Hooker, was he just a sergeant? Because in that case, Lieutenant McGuire would have been T.J. Hooker's superior. Would have been the shoe would be on the other foot.
He had a lot of walk-on parts. He was on Wagon Train. He was on General Hospital.
He was on a bunch of Mission Impossibles.
Yeah. A couple of Twilight Zones.
Oh,
Rawhide.
Yeah, Mission Impossible, definitely.
He was on Bengals.
Bonanza.
He was on the Bengals Greatest Hits video.
I think what you're seeing in that is just sort of the life of an itinerant actor, you know, trying to find a place, taking gigs that were offered before he settled down in the...
Yep.
Because, you know, the dream and the curse of anybody working in Hollywood and TV is to get that series gig, right? Is to land, you know, not a guest spot, but a permanent spot on a recurring TV show. And once you get it, then that's great until you get typecast as Spock.
The problem is I think you've got to be bigger than the character you're playing and, you know, not to say anything about, you know... Kirk or Shatner, but I think that the Kirk character kind of overshadows Shatner, which if you could believe that, yeah, overshadows Shatner. Whereas I think if you look around, I think Picard slash Patrick Stewart, I think Patrick Stewart is bigger than Picard and he can do awesome things and he's known outside of just that. Whereas when you think of Shatner, even if you're looking at the commercials he's doing, it's still Kirk, you know.
He did a good job in that show Fringe.
I don't think I watched that. So maybe that's why my opinion hasn't
changed. Well, I know he rocked it in, what was it, L.A., the Law Show. The Law Show he did.
No, that was Shatner.
Boston Legal, yes.
Back on Nimoy.
Oh.
But I always thought that
Shatner... Yeah, we won't give Shatner no love.
I always thought that Nimoy needed to show up in an episode of Boston Legal.
That would have been the best.
Because they did make Star Trek references in Boston Legal. They did his cell phone, the ringtone was a communicator one time.
That's kind of awesome.
And there was somebody made a comment about Klingons, and the Shatner character went, Klingons?
Oh,
anyway, that music tells us that we need to shut up and move on. So we're going to take a short station break here.
Do some station business.
Engage
the business.
Make it so. All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's not anywhere to be found.
Cuckoo.
Grewhouse.
We'll be right back.
On Friday, May 15th, don't miss Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter John Prine at Cullen Performance Hall at the University of Houston with special guest Justin Townes Earle. Long considered a songwriter, John Prine is a rare talent whose songs have been recorded by Johnny Cash, Bonnie Raitt, the Everly Brothers, Kris Kristofferson, Carly Simon, Joan Baez, and many others. Prine's many accolades include 2 Grammys and the distinction of being one of the few songwriters honored by the Library of Congress and as U.S. Poet Laureate. Don't miss John Prine Friday, May 15th at Cullen Performance Hall at the University of Houston. Special guest Justin Townes Earle will open the show. For tickets and details, visit entertainhouston.com. Presented in part by KPFT Houston.
Hurting nobody.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now it's time for something other than baritone.
Close the YouTube windows. We're back.
All right. So, yeah, we were just looking at Shatner's role, and there's a whole Boston Legal Star Trek references montage on YouTube if you're interested in that, which I'm sure you are. Okay, so no Barrett time, right, Barrett?
No.
Would you like to just go extemporaneous?
We should talk about one Barrett time thing.
Oh, Barrett's mistake?
No,
Barrett's misclick?
No. I mean, that's every show. No, we have one calendar item we should bring up.
Oh, we sure do. Yeah, this coming Friday is actually the Geek Gathering, so it's going to be the March installment. So March. Spring is in the air, possibly.
But it's going to be cold.
Pitter-patter of,
it's going to be cold.
Pitter-patter for clattering of geek teeth, I suppose. But yeah, 2808 Milam at Drew's, where you want to be. The name of the place is Cone's Art, Wine, Darts, Coffee, Beer, and
hopefully,
what have you.
Hopefully, Cone will have his fire thing.
Probably
out.
A fire pit. I know that we're supposed to get some rain Thursday. We could have good weather Friday. We've been pretty lucky so far. Even on the nights it's been raining, it's been drizzly.
It's supposed to not rain on Friday. The weather forecast says it's going to rain tomorrow, but maybe not Friday.
Ooh, and good thing you mentioned that, Jaylee. If you could remember, if you can't, not a big deal, but if you could bring that Xenon Flash, if you have anywhere, I'd like to try rebooting the Raspberry Pis to see if they're really camera shy.
I'll try
and if not, it's not a big deal, but that'd be kind of a fun, you know, stupid pet trick kind of thing to do.
Reboot your computer by flashing it?
Yeah, so you don't have to be, like Jay would say, you don't have to be a geek to attend, but you just show up, hang out, bring your laptop. Don't bring a laptop. We've got people
bring
that come.
Bring a Xenon Flash.
Yeah, bring a Xenon Flash if you want to.
Friday is sunny all day, no rain. 55 nice. High, low 37.
Fabulous.
Ooh, so chilly in the evening. But yeah, it should be a nice night. Con will definitely have a fire pit out, so come on out. We get started a little after 7, and then people will hang out till 10:30, 11, 11:30.
Yeah,
And drink!
All right. So, where were we?
Well, I heard an interesting item, sort of building on last week. We spent a huge chunk of the show talking about Superfish and Lenovo and security and everything. And coming off of the back of the Superfish thing, Lenovo was saying that they were going to re-examine their pack-in application review process. Well, Lenovo has since then announced that they intend to take a lead role. I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the exact press release in front of me. They intend to take a lead role in shipping systems that are clean and don't have more than just minimal amounts of pack-in software. So we were kind of hoping that this might happen. Last week we were discussing
it
briefly.
The pendulum swung finally again.
Yeah,
it seems like third time maybe.
So with any luck, what this means is if you go and buy a Lenovo computer, you know, in a couple of months, once they get all their processes ironed out, you might be able to, and, you know, the warehouses are drained of inventory that's already been sold, you might be able to pick up a laptop that when you open it up and Windows comes up doesn't have 16 different third-party antivirus applications, 4, you know, get on our internet service provider things, 6 pre-installed applications that do whatever, 45 toolbars, and whatever the hell else is on Windows laptops these days. I don't know. I have a Mac.
So can we talk about Nimoy? I mean, Nimoy, just for one more second. So this was kind of weird. So no, this,
we've already
this,
moved on.
No, we moved on. This isn't just, you know, harping on what he's done. This is
it's
more of a larger question. Yeah, I know. I know.
Can't we find his Katra?
Well, here's
the,
he's
put it
not,
back in.
He is still dead, but he kind of lives on from beyond the grave ever so slightly. And this is what, I don't know if I should be irked about this. I'm a little irked about this, but let me know how y'all feel. So there was a big thing going around, like Leonard Nimoy's final tweet, more or less. And the tweet was, he said, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved, except in memory, LLAP, which is live long and prosper." So I went to Twitter thinking, you know, someone says that's someone's final tweet. That should be the last tweet I see from them. So apparently, maybe his estate or his marketing people or whatever, they're on his Twitter account. And he might not have ever been, you know, he might have had a ghost tweeter, I guess how you would say
is
that.
Is the next tweet, remember? And
yeah,
the tweet after
yeah, but
that
that's the thing.
To...
Shouldn't they retire that Twitter account and maybe do like, you know, like in memoriam, you know, in memoriam or something along those lines? Don't tell me like, hey, because that could be a little bit scary. Someone said like, hey, your grandmother's dead and you go down there and she left you a note on the fridge door. That's a little unnerving. That's kind of what it was like for me. I'm like, Spock's not dead. He's still tweeting, although not as cool as he
climb the steps, Barrett. Climb the steps of Mount Celea.
I think there needs to be like a division on a timeline that's like, it's no longer this person there. Or, hey, this is, you know,
how many,
needs to
how
be
many dead
like
Facebook friends do you have?
None.
Are you asking
right
because
now.
The number is changing, Jay?
I think just one.
I've got like...
So,
wow,
but doesn't Facebook have a policy on what happens to their accounts for the
they
most
do
part?
Now. They just formalized
yeah.
it.
So what is that, though? What's the...
They can be turned into an in memoriam yep. page.
So, but you wouldn't expect, for instance, would Cynthia hop on your... Well, she might, actually, with a good sense of humor.
You can keep you alive for
multiple years after your death.
You can designate...
She's already writing the poems.
You can designate sort of a next of kin and Facebook on your death, on
we'll
proof of their death.
Over.
We'll, yeah, we'll
but
pass
I don't know that Facebook
over.
Keeps track of what, you know, like, when people die, like, people I've known that have died that have Facebook pages, of course, and when they die, all their friends who've, you know, already established a relationship... will go and post on their page, you know, like, oh, you know, memories of so and so, and
I was
like,
going to say in case they're checking it from wherever they end up.
It's probably like
it
a cathartic
kind of. It kind of becomes
know.
Like you know, like a place where they light all the candles.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like a right. ghost bike or something. So I don't know if Facebook pays attention to see if an account is suddenly dormant and only receiving condolence updates on their page. So yeah. there are these. I've got dead friends all over my. I'm reluctant to like unfriend them.
No, you don't want to get somewhere and then be like, hey, so what happened down there on Earth? I thought we were cool. You know?
Yeah. Come on, Jay. The second I die, you unfriend me?
What? Was it something God. I said or
so,
didn't say?
So Facebook, actually, they've put in some software that is patrolling users' posts and different, you know, like, I guess, lead indicators and factors that will start to flag suicides and flag people that are at risk for taking their own lives and cries for help and stuff like that.
Big data.
I don't know what they're
going
to doing it yet. It's a good, possibly good use for big data. It's going to be weird to see, like, you know, how they draw those lines on privacy and you when they feel allowed to call the cops and get intervention. But
does,
it could be a really cool thing.
Does it come
thing.
Up with, like, a Clippy and it's like, it looks like you're contemplating suicide.
I'm assuming, you know, if they've got that code, it wouldn't be that much further of a step to be like, oops, we missed this one, so let's just go posting this. That's a horrible thing to say, but I mean, they are working in that direction. So I would think that, you know, detecting someone who's depressed, surely they can detect someone who's dead.
All right, so there's three things that we have not talked about that happened this week that I'm surprised have been left out of the list. One is the net neutrality FCC.
Yeah.
Decision. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
But, you know, beyond that, the llamas.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
And
oh, lovely white dress you're wearing.
The dress.
Yeah. Okay. There was all in pretty much the same amount of time. At least the llamas and the dress hit really close together.
Well, net neutrality was passed by the, you know, and then that
was like,
same day.
Yeah, that was like net neutrality in the morning, and then the internet like went free for all, and we had llamas and dresses, and like was, this is like exactly what the Republicans said was going to happen.
Well, the llamas was very interesting. I thought
all
because
bets
was,
are off.
It was. Somebody said it, and I agree. It was like, this is exactly what Twitter is for. I mean, I was alerted. I was alerted in real time.
Okay, wait, Jay. You need to level set the audience here. What are we?
Okay,
what are we talking about?
All right. So if you've not been around any media source, you may or may not know that last week a couple of llamas that were
one white, one black, pretty
one
awesome.
White, one black llama.
Was this in like San Diego?
No, it was in Arizona.
Arizona. Okay.
They're therapy llamas. They take them to old folks' homes and let them pet them, and they feel better.
Literally, did not know that was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Apparently it is. So, I mean, I guess if you got llamas laying around, you try to figure out ways to monetize.
How do I monetize these llamas?
So they take them to this place and either unloading them or loading them or even in the house, they got spooked and ran out into the streets of this city in Arizona. And, of course, the news chopper came in and it was a beautiful sunny day. And probably right around noon, so there was no weird shadows. And they basically saw these llamas running around and people trying to capture the llamas.
The llamas were having none of this.
And it was you know, there's plenty of opportunities for this to go horribly wrong. Now, what made this interesting was that it went on for more than an hour.
It's like the O.J. chase.
It kind of was. It's like,
that's what it reminded me of. It's like we got a white llama moving slowly down the drive.
A slow-moving white llama being chased by the authorities through this. But it was happening in real time, and it was going on for a long. There's plenty of opportunities for it to go really bad, like the llama to run out in the street and get smacked by a truck.
Yeah, you go from a really cute news situation to like,
But because everybody kind of got tuned into it, and they were running a live feed. So it wasn't like a news story where they did a snippet. It was live, raw video. With no soundtrack, with no music, no commentary, weird grating noise, actually. So they had to turn the sound down. So Twitter became the soundtrack to this to this event. So yep. If you were – I felt like I'm very lucky that I'm getting to see this. I mean, it was – I showed it to my wife who didn't catch it in real time, and it's
cute. You're going to remember in 20 years where you were.
It's a nice story when you saw it, but
unfolding is different.
Watching it in real time was like, you know, it was like the opposite of where I was on 9/11 when I was watching that in real time. It was just the whole story. You didn't know how it was going to turn out. You didn't really know exactly what was happening, but there it was. So that was very interesting.
Same thing, but just on a much less death than on a happy tip.
On a much cuter level.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happened was that picture of the dress.
Now, what did you think when you first saw it? And did you realize?
So what we're talking about
background?
Here is that someone posted a very, very poorly photographed, unwhite balanced, washed out photograph
from a camera phone.
From a camera phone of a dress
with a lot of overhead lighting in the back.
With a caption underneath it that was like, "Am I going crazy? ? What color is this dress?" And depending upon how your brain works when you looked at it. And if you guys are having trouble visualizing this and you're near a computer, just hit Google and type in what color is the dress, and you'll immediately be deluged with photographs of this thing. Depending upon how you looked at it, the dress either appeared to be a white dress with gold, like, decoration, gold piping and
gold
design
stripes.
On it, gold stripes right. on
alternate,
it,
it's called
or
patterns, yeah.
a blue dress with black stripes. One of those two. Or maybe it was a... No, I'm sorry.
No, white
gold. White,
white
gold,
gold
or
blue,
blue
and black.
Black. Yeah.
So the thing about the dress was that when I first, that was another thing that was exploding on Twitter. So you're looking at Twitter and people are talking about this dress and they're arguing. And I'm thinking like,
at first I thought it was a joke. That's what I thought.
That's what I thought. I thought obviously it's white and gold.
When I saw it immediately, I was like, it's white and gold. What are you people, stupid?
No. But see, here's the thing it was white and gold.
No, it's not.
All right.
I could make it flip depending on which color I look at first. And then I look at it, it'll flip.
But the thing was, okay, so what I thought was happening was that it was white and gold, and that these people that were saying it was blue and black were just taking a contrary position, being trolling in real time.
Right.
And it got me to the point where I was like, you can't trust anyone.
It's not safe to go outside anymore.
The whole foundation of your world was
wrong. I don't know you anymore.
Because people are just obviously getting off on just being contrary. And I actually had somebody come up to me, you know, on Facebook, private message, Jay, you're the only one I trust. Tell me, what
did
you see?
Did you pull it into Photoshop and try to check exactly what it was?
I gimped it to see the values,
Or gimp.
I didn't get to that point. By the time I, you know, kind of got caught up to it, somebody had taken it and done the white balance and fixed it. So what it turns out is it was, in fact, blue and black. And the way that our brains are wired for seeing things in daylight how you saw the picture.
It's also a little bit too. Some people have, I think, an extra color sensing cone in their eyes. Is it? Yeah, rods do lightness
cones,
and cones.
Cones
yeah, cones. So it's a little bit different. So some people can see a little bit more of the spectrum than others.
Flicked, says it's black and blue.
I saw black and blue.
Okay,
I ever saw.
Okay, did you see black and blue like your brain? You saw it, but you knew what those colors interpreted to, or did you see it in dark blue and dark black? Like if you see that dress in
I saw it in black, and the blue was somewhat dark. It wasn't super dark.
I mean, I could see the light tinges of blue.
No, I light blue and gold a few times.
For me,
I didn't see, split between the two.
I never saw white, and I never saw gold.
I never saw white and gold. So your brain and your eyes auto-corrected, color-corrected it for the RGB.
I saw.
Would it have anything to do with like the lighting you're looking at it in, or anything?
Not necessarily. It's much more what you're making. So
I saw it at work, and I didn't actually even know what. Like, I actually saw it on my diaspora feed or whatever, and it was somebody who was, I guess, annoyed by the whole thing, and had actually somebody had put flames on it and said, "What color is it now?" And I was like, it's a black and blue dress on fire. I don't get it at all. Like, I didn't know about the phenomenon. And then it was that night or the next day. I guess it was the next day. One of my stepdaughters came up, and everybody, they were like, there's this chattering hubbub going on. And I was like, what's going on? And they're like, what color is this dress? I'm like, yeah, it's black and blue. And they're like, no, it's white and gold.
I only saw it as white and gold. And I could see no black and blue until somebody, I saw a picture where someone had taken it and color corrected it for exposure and whatever. And it was black and gold there. And then in the picture
black
they had
blue.
Black and blue there. I'm sorry. Yes. And in the picture it was a side by side. So they had the before and the after. And when I saw the two of them next to each other, it was like a switch flipped. And now no matter how hard I look at it, I can't see the white and the gold at all. Like,
see,
one or two people
said that, that they got it to flip while they were looking at it.
It happened.
But
to
it
me.
Never
but
happened
I
to me.
Back.
All I ever saw was black and blue.
And it's a lot like, you know, for instance, like the picture of the old lady and the young woman. You know what I'm talking about? It's two, and they say, like, it's psychology.
The optical illusion.
Yeah, it's an optical illusion in the same thing. It's like the dancer is the dancer. Yeah, is the dancer spinning to the right? Is the dancer spinning to the left? And then the one is the mask, you know, concave or is it convex? It's like those things. So once you kind of know the little trick to do that, it seems. But this is neat because one thing, it caused a huge pandemonium on the internet. But the other thing is, this is one of those things that lets you kind of see what it's like to be human. It's like you can actually observe what your mind's doing, that it's playing some tricks on you, and actually see that, hey, I can't really trust what my mind's telling me. And you kind of get to be an observer with that, with everyone arguing.
It's really
it's kind of a neat experience like that.
It was Schrodinger's dress.
Yeah.
It was really buff.
Although I do think, I looked at Twitter, I think it destroyed some friendships before people really figured out what's going on. Because it was like, you're lying to me. Just be straight. Why are you messing with me?
Yeah.
Tell me right now. Like,
it was funny anymore.
But
now it's serious, man.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll kidding aside.
And here's
seriously.
A geek life tip that you can use. If you're a young gentleman and you're like looking at a young woman who's wearing a dress and she's offended because you were maybe staring, you can just ask her that you were trying to figure out what color her dress was.
That might
it's
actually
good that you're
work.
Married. It could work, though. It would have worked on that day.
The best
response to the whole what color is this dress was somebody who posted a picture of a yellow chicken and said, what color is this cat?
It reminded me a whole bunch of that. And that's what I thought at first. I thought they were looking like there was an in-joke. Like, first thing I thought of was the Monty Python yellow, no blue, boing. You know, I was like, okay, that's what that is. That's a good setup.
What is your favorite color?
Color. No, wait.
Yeah, see, I actually, when I first saw it, like, what color, I didn't actually know there was a whole phenomenon around it. And so I was just like, are they having an argument about, like, what color blue it is? Like, is it periwinkle? Or, like, I thought there was maybe some argument about what color blue.
There's so much fluff that comes out on Facebook. I mean, there's so many people like, what color shirt would you be? Or what kind of fish would you be? Or what kind of, you know, it's like someone, like, watched, like, too many versions of, like, the dating game in the early 80s. And they're like, I will do all these surveys and figure out stuff. It's
I
like,
just wonder if people, no. you know, if it, what I, what really... I keyed in on the whole what color is this dress is it made it really obvious to me how you could two different people could look at the same thing and just absolutely know a truth about that thing that didn't jive with what the other person knew as a truth about that thing. And they were both right.
This sounds a little like net neutrality, only that there is probably a right side. As far as the confusion around it,
those people that were on slower connections saw it as one color.
It's still dithering.
But, you know, I mean, when you think about the whole, I mean, this was like, everybody got, I think, a little upset because it seemed like this petty argument over this dress, and everybody just knew that they were right.
Mm-hmm.
But that was such it was analogous to people arguing politics online or arguing vaccines online. The people who believe what they believe, it's so obvious to them. So the people who saw it as blue and black, it's just obvious that it's blue and black. And it was an opportunity. Nobody wanted to come together and have a discussion to say it was both.
Yeah.
Or we're both right. And it's.
Well, that's what got me is it kind of comes, you know, it's like, you know, the whole sportsmanship kind of doesn't really show when you're a winner. It shows much more when you're the loser. And this is kind of a flip thing. So it was interesting to see how people treated someone else that, you know, they thought this person's obviously wrong. But instead of like saying, hey, let's talk about this. Let's, you know. They went right. confrontational. They went full right. nuke right away.
Well, because you challenged their reality.
It's a fundamental thing. Like, it's hard to. It's easy to explain complex concepts where there are that are made up of base concepts. It's a lot more difficult to get in there and be like, you know, what is blue? Well, it's blue. Blue is blue. Its existence defines itself.
Suddenly, half the world was colorblind.
Yeah.
And then this
and so
also
for them. That's what it looked like.
So this is also weird, too. So I don't know how much of this – hopefully a lot of this will show up on Snopes. But apparently people were saying because the atmospheric content and different things that blue doesn't really appear in nature all that much. And that if you go back, you know, like 500-600 years, there are very, very few references to the color blue. Mainly the Egyptians, the only one that ever wrote about blue, and very, very fewly and infrequently. But that was mainly because they had the ability to dye things blue. Mm-hmm. So they were even saying, like, if you ask someone to look up in the sky and say, hey, what color is that? No one really had the word for blue. They would just say I don't see anything. Sky-colored. Yeah. So it's weird. So the introduction of blue is very, very new, and it might be kind of newish to humans, and maybe that's one of the reasons that a lot of people aren't really
It's white with a gold sun.
I do know my mother hit me with a stumper once when I was much, much littler. She asked me if I could think of any blue foods, and she really got me because I can't. Can you guys
blueberries.
Think of anything?
Blueberries
aren't really blue.
Blue
they're kind of purpley.
An entire tub of ice cream. That's sad.
Well, the thing that got, the thing
Blue
that got me was
Star Wars.
When
yep.
somebody when somebody said it real the color of something is not actually that color, it's just the color.
Well, it's the absence of that color. It's reflecting
that it
all that
or something, you know, because
absorbs
light.
Everything but the one.
It's absorbing.
Or less, yeah.
It's absorbing everything except that color is what it's reflecting.
So this is very. This is kind of cool. Man. So it's the whole Clinton, and we get to go like, what? It depends on what your definition of is. And we've got a dress. That's pretty awesome.
And then the other thing that came up, which was, I guess, yesterday or the day before when the photographer got that photo of the woodpecker with the weasel on the back.
Yes, the internet exploded.
The internet was primed by that point. The internet was paying attention. The internet had like two awesome days of really cool stuff. They were looking for something else to glom onto. I think it could have been a marginal thing and it would have gotten more response, but it was a cool follow-up.
What happened? I didn't see it.
Well, there was apparently this photographer caught... just happened to catch a photo of a woodpecker flying by that had a weasel riding it.
If you type in woodpecker and weasel is the most popular autocorrect, or yeah, I'm sorry, autocompletion on
but
Google.
But the thing
right
is,
the weasel
is that
was
everybody
attacking it and it flew off.
Well, that was the thing. I was watching the news this morning. I think it was this morning news. They were talking about it, and the one news anchor, the weather woman, said, you know, what people don't realize is that weasel was actually attacking them.
Shut up! They were having a great time. They were hanging out.
It wasn't like, you know, Game of Thrones.
He was commuting.
No, the bird was just like, probably the only reason why the bird lived is because the photographer distracted the weasel long enough for the bird to make an escape.
However, there have been a lot of memes spun off of that. Like, I like the one where they're putting the snow. No, what are
they?
The Star Wars guys. Yeah, the Star Wars guys that go through on the Ewok Battle of Endor, whatever those riders are called.
Right.
They had Gandalf on the eagle.
Yes.
Above it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Internet.
Yes, how do you explain it to the children? Well, when a weasel and a woodpecker love each other very much.
They go riding in the sky.
Well, what was funny was going back to the llamas, because
really?
You had a white llama and a black llama, so somebody took the llamas and painted gold stripes on the white llama and black stripes on the...
What color are these llamas?
So is the woodpecker... really big, or is the weasel small?
It's a very small weasel. Yeah,
it's a young weasel, but it's a fairly hefty bird.
When y'all were saying that, I was thinking like, you know, it's going to be this like.
Did you see the picture?
Woodpecker.
Well, yeah, do you know what the average size of a weasel is?
African or European?
No, but I'm assuming the weasels are about that big.
No, it was probably about that big. It wasn't that big, but you know, I think that weasel was trying to take that bird down. The bird was bigger than the weasel expected.
For the listeners at home, Jay Lee's holding his hands about this far apart.
Yeah. So the internet has been very entertaining this week, I have to say.
But yet more people know about this stuff than the whole net neutrality outcome, and even that it got passed. Can we just visit that for a quick?
Yeah,
we probably should. Now that we've done the internet thing and talked about the llamas and the dress and the weasel.
So the FCC, was it the FCC? It was the FCC.
Yes.
declared or went ahead and passed, ruled that the internet is a utility or should be treated as a utility.
Under Title II, that the FCC ruled that under Title II, they've got the right to say that the internet should be classified as a utility. To the chagrin of Verizon, who
responded in a way that I would hope violated my contract, allowed me to get out of it, because Verizon was unhappy with the decision, and they wrote their response on their webpage in Morse code,
saying that it was, you know, a throwback to old school technology from the 30s.
Well,
and
old school regulation from
the 30s.
But they did it in a cool way that's totally unbecoming of them. And I think this is why you get so many different, you know, it's not that people are seeing, you know, the whole, you know, net neutrality thing is white and gold or it's blue and black. It's that everyone has a different way to spin it. You know, you go to the government, you listen to them, they're spinning it one way. You go to the telcos, you know, they're spinning it one way. The cable company is spinning it a different way. So, you know, I'm looking at every article I'm reading about, like, what actually passed. It's all very slanted one way or the other. It's really hard to get, like, a clean take on this even after it's passed.
I've had people,
you know,
opinions
are still spinning.
People that I trust on Twitter, friends of mine, tweeting kind of like in the aftermath of the decision, tweeting like, I don't know if this is a good thing. I don't know if adding government regulation into the mix is, you know, I don't want to give the government the ability to, like, decide what I can and can't do on the internet. And it's a point of view that I'm, much like the dress, I'm sure he believes in, but it just seems absolutely foreign to me how you could interpret the decision in any way other than positive for the consumers, because you don't have to. You don't have to get into a theoretical discussion to talk about how badly ISPs can act. All you have to do is look at reality.
It's an inherent fear of the government, I think, is the people who are – because I work with a bunch of them. and all those people that are saying that I know personally are pretty much all, like,
hardcore libertarians.
They're libertarians or very conservative Republicans, and they feel that the government screws up everything. The government should stay out of everything, and so they don't want the government to go in because they're going to make it worse. And it's not necessarily that they think things are good now, although some of them do.
But they think that
all that can happen is that it will just get worse.
One of the big political cartoons that was floating around was the whole thing. You know, it's this one person looking over the internet with a hammer, and everyone else is shouting, "Hey, it's not broke." But so this is just to give you an idea of, you know, where
the Tumblr of cartoons.
Yeah, but where this comes from, if you go to, you know, just say go to a search engine, go to Google and type in political cartoons, net neutrality, go to images, they're all very slanted in one direction. There's no dual-sided cartoons. They're all on this side. So someone finally came out and said, like, hey, all these political cartoonists, they obviously don't understand net neutrality. So someone went, and I mean, I'm seeing, like, just hundreds, just, you know, all of them good on the first page that I pull up. And they took a handful of them and, you know, somehow worked it into the whole, you know, cartoon.
They just took whatever the message was that the person was saying and changed it to the cartoonist doesn't understand net neutrality.
Mm-hmm. Which I think would be almost every political cartoonist that I'm seeing that has touched
It's an obtuse term. It doesn't unpack well. And it's a relatively esoteric set of concepts when you get into trying to explain it to people. Net neutrality, to start with, is a terrible term. And then, you know, obviously you get people who, when you take a superficial stab at understanding what it means, they get wigged out by the whole, like, the government is going to set rules about how internet providers act. Well, okay, I can see why people might be troubled by that. But when you look at what actually is going on here, it's they're setting rules to correct absolutely just
was to correct abuses.
Abusive, atrocious, incredibly just anti-consumer, ridiculous behavior. But they don't see that.
They see the government stepping in to screw up things and get rid of the free market and da 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 da.
No, that's why we have Comcast.
Well, but the thing is...
Yeah, even though the result of the net neutrality ruling is essentially to maintain the status quo as it was before Netflix started being extorted and paying extra money to have bandwidth to go across Verizon
and
other people's
Netflix
networks.
So did Netflix offer up, like, any kind of official statement after the vote?
Yeah, they're getting ready to sue.
Good. How much did they pay over? It was like 26. It was a lot.
I'm sure
it was just
you know, I hope you like your good thing you got your internet going there. Too bad if something were to happen to it, maybe you should pay us some money. I mean, it was just absolute extortion that the big ISPs are doing when it comes to how they were treating their interconnection.
I think the best way, you know, when you if you want to follow the money on the whole net neutrality, you know, there's the, one of the fears that people have is, well, now there's no incentive to build out more network or, you know, expand bandwidth or
that's
any
what,
of those kinds of
that's
things.
That's what AT&T was saying. That,
yeah, that's
that
a threat. They're
as
like, if you vote this, we're not going to do it.
We can't do anything else.
Well, you the know FCC what, called them on it. They claimed that they had a bunch of projects going, and the FCC asked, requested the list, the official list, and AT&T backed down on that. But Comcast, the interesting thing is Comcast has spent –
That's because AT&T didn't want to give them a list of the cities that Google was putting Google Fiber
in. Yeah, pretty much.
Just go to this link. Just go to google.fiber.com, fiber.google.com.
But they were trying to exaggerate basically any place they had ever imagined possibly someday maybe they might consider doing something or thinking about doing something. They had that list.
Oh, yeah.
And claimed, well, now we're not doing any of them.
Yeah, well,
so
just like
100,
how –
100 cities just lost
yeah,
their
before
good internet.
I really was holding out hope that AT&T was going to bring fiber to my door. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, until Google does first. But no, the thing on Comcast, the place where I saw it kind of summed up the best, you know, when they say, oh, well, they won't have the resources and, you know, government's going to mess this up. Comcast makes so much money. They spent a lot of money on building out their bandwidth last year. I believe they spent billions of dollars on it. But they spent more than that. Spent more money than they did on building out their network on stock buybacks to increase the value of their share price.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious how much they spent on lobbying against net neutrality.
But the thing about that is this number, this stock buyback number is huge. The amount they spent on lobbying is probably pretty big, but they did not spend billions of dollars on it. Where they spent billions of dollars, as if I remember the numbers correctly, on stock buybacks, which is just mathematical games. By them buying their stock back, there's fewer shares, and so the value of each share goes up. The company looks more valuable
and all that.
But it's just a game, and it does nothing for anybody company wise other than financial, you know, juggling.
But the thing is, if people don't like it, then they can go to a competitor because they're not happy with that business's practices.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how the free market works.
Mm-hmm. And it absolutely works that way with internet providers. I've got my choice of let's see here, let me see.
Oh, see, but that's because the government regulates it, and if the government wasn't in it in the first place, there'd be a free market.
I've got like 8 or 9 choices where I live. I know that's probably – I'm probably in the minority, but I've got like Comcast the slow speed. I've got the mid-range Comcast. I've got Comcast 100, Comcast 150, and then there's a Comcast – they bundle it with the TV and give me a deal too. So I've got lots of options.
If you're, you know what? If you're lucky, you might also actually
have – or I could dial up.
You might also actually have a Verizon DSL option at like 128 kbps.
Yeah, maxing out at 8 megabits per second, one of the other things that happened before net neutrality is the FCC – declared broadband speed to be, I believe, 25 megabits mm-hmm. per second.
25.
Which they also fought. Comcast fought that tooth and nail, too.
Well, absolutely.
They Comcast, suddenly went from saying, like, hey, we've got X amount of...
Comcast shouldn't have been the one fighting it, though.
AT&T.
Because most of AT&T's offerings don't
meet
that.
Well, they're all subpar. Yeah, they don't.
And in some areas, they don't even have a single option that hits that. You know, especially in rural areas, you can't even get... up to 25.
So there have been people that have had to just hear about this whole internet thing for the last 20 years, pretty much 20 years now, and they don't know.
They might be able to get one
the
and, callers, one and a half
you've heard
or
in
three.
The past, the people who live out in rural areas.
They're probably just now getting on MySpace.
Wait till they hear about these llamas.
They're good. They're never going to stream it.
Wait,
they're
going to
have a really hard time downloading the text releases, just you know, people you know, telling them what's going on. Maybe ASCII llamas.
ASCII llamas.
Quick, go buy ASCIIllamas.com. Buy that domain up.
I was going to say they're going to have Winamp at least. So
that's what I thought the whole llamas thing was just a Winamp making a comeback.
That would be awesome marketing.
That would be awesome. Wonder who owns WinampLlamas.com.
That was my favorite part about installing Winamp was hearing what happens to llamas.
Yeah,
that first play. I wonder if I could go find an MP3. That I'm sure.
Oh yeah, you can find it on YouTube in like 3 seconds.
I want a real MP3 though. I want a 16-bit
That could be
one,
your.
I got
you
one in my
saddlebag.
Like,
your
in your MP3 pack.
Set it to your text alert sound, so whenever anybody texts you, Winamp.
That fired up in a conference room once. We were we had to really quickly, and this was a while ago. Oh, we had to get some stuff
let's
installed.
Let's get some backstory here. So Winamp, which is a media company,
early MP, one of the first MP3
still
players.
Using it.
Yeah,
still
some crazy people haven't migrated.
It had
off
cool
it.
Plugins. Like the first time I saw the Geist plugin, I was like, I will just watch this for days.
When MP3s started to enter the consciousness in 1997 or 1998, one of the first players that you could use to play, actually you could play them in a lot of different methods, but Winamp was a very compact, very light, very fast.
It was new. Yeah,
very
yeah.
new, very configurable
good.
Player.
It was one of the first good players.
Yeah, it was kind of the application of the hour. If you had MP3s, if you were getting MP3s off of, Usenet or wherever you were getting them.
Mainly
it was skinnable. You could make it look.
Oh,
and
yes.
I spent a lot of hours looking at Winamp skins. Again, this was, circa college. I was in college, so I had some time on my hands at the time.
But Winamp was notorious for one thing besides
when you first installed it had an MP3. Who can do the voice best? Groovehouse? Jaylee?
Oh, I thought maybe you had it on your computer.
Do you have it?
Play.
Can you play it so
well,
we don't actually...
Can we say the
we
word
to hit
that
the
it
dump
says?
On us?
Is that allowable?
Let's see if we can actually find
this
it.
This is actually... I think we're getting
it.
Into commentary, so I think you'd be allowed to say
let me
it.
See if I can turn my volume up.
Winamp. That last little latent... The, yeah.
Winamp. But that was very satisfying, when you installed. But what the hell with the llamas?
It was their logo. It was their.
I know.
It was
what
that
they
also
have to do with MP3s or amps.
Monty, I think with the internet and with
geeks. It was a simpler time back in the late 90s.
Well, no, it was that also. Llamas have a very, very early geeky reference because of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail. At the end, a lot of the llama references. Cousin llama.
When they did the
327 Mexican jumping llamas.
Ralph the Wonder Llama.
It's actually the beginning. Yes.
Or it's the beginning when they're rolling.
Credits.
I forgot about that.
I don't know that one.
This was when a handful of them were coming out.
God.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
I prefer mushroom, the
badger.
Badger, mushroom,
badger,
snake.
Badger.
Badger, 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 badger.
Taking me
yeah.
back.
Yeah, I was gonna say badger.
That was a subpar
badger,
one.
Badger.
I was in the badger camp.
I don't know that one.
That was good, but it was from
the dancing hamsters. I still hum that sometimes.
Peanut butter jelly time is still good.
Did
they steal that from a Disney movie though? Didn't they?
Robin Hood.
Yeah, Robin Hood, the animated Robin Hood. And possibly that was around before that.
Oodalolly.
Yes.
The sad thing is, if you look forward in time,
that's really sad.
Can
no,
we do
but
that?
Well, think about it.
Can
is
we look
that,
forward in time?
That 50 years from now, there's going to be people who are going to be like at a funeral or at some sort of gathering or reunion, and they're going to be talking about these memes. They're going to be talking about they'll be remembering all your base or belong to us and the dress and the llamas and that stuff, as opposed to I don't know like now. It's
here lies Peter Hughes. All our base truly belong to him.
all his EOL belong to him.
I think a nice little respective EOL would be a good thing.
End of
line. Who knows? Yeah.
Where up until recently, then the thing would be I remember Uncle Bob. He had that hot 68 Camaro or what a bitchin' Camaro. Kind of thing where now it's going to be the sort of shared thing or, where were you when Kennedy was shot kind
where
of stuff.
Where were you when the llamas running around? Yeah.
Now
where
it's
were
be...
you when you first saw the dancing baby?
I was
house.
At work. I
yeah,
was
looking
working
over shoulder.
At, in a .com company at Questia in downtown Houston and somebody had it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is stupid. But
they did like it a lot more than I liked it. I liked it for about 35 seconds.
I couldn't stand it, but it was one of those things where everybody who had a computer had to run it and look at it and call people over to look at
here's the
thing. And it showed up on Ally McBeal.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a whole Ally McBeal episode about it.
It was one of those things where a lot of people hadn't seen, at least on lowering computers, it was when people new to computers were first kind of getting on the net peripherally, and they hadn't seen 3D animation. They hadn't seen anything kind of quirky, and it was just right place, right time for a lot of new users, and it kind of blew people away, I think is what it was.
It was their
Photoshop
first trip
Max,
to the uncanny valley.
Yeah, exactly what it was.
It's very uncanny.
But the most important download...
It wasn't that well done.
The most important download, the first significant download of media from the internet, for me, was...
Terry Hatcher picture?
Huh?
Joking, sorry.
Oh, okay. No, the first episode of South Park.
Oh, yeah.
Wait,
no, wait.
The
Jesus versus Santa.
Jesus versus Santa.
Okay.
The first episode.
Mine was just the clip of the song about Kyle's mom.
The Jesus versus Santa was the short that they made with. The first episode was the one was Cartman gets an anal probe.
No. I'm talking about the internet only done with the real cutouts.
That was the short.
That wasn't that short.
Well, that's what it's called. It was the short.
They did it as a Christmas card.
Oh, it was the download that went on.
Yeah. Back in 14.4.
Downloading.
Probably 28.8 back then. When was that?
I had dual channel ISDN.
Oh, well, you were one of those guys.
Buffering.
We hated those guys.
Provided free by my company to the house. Yes.
What that would be? That'd be. I know South Park premiered in '97, so this has got to be either '95 or '96 when the Jesus versus Santa thing happened.
The Daily Show embraced it too, because I remember the Daily Show was one of the first things I actually watched online exclusively. You know, I would stream it online.
The Daily Show with Craig Kilborn.
No. You know what? I remember that might have been right around the switch over to John, possibly.
Okay, yeah.
1992.
Oh my gosh! Really?
Yeah.
They often refer to as Jesus versus the Spirit of Christmas is the name of two different animated short films made by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They are precursors to the animated series South Park. The differences to differentiate the two, they are often referred to as Jesus versus Frosty, 1992, and Jesus versus Santa in 1995.
Okay. That's when I showed up at U of H and had my first actual Ethernet connection to the network. There was a dial-up, and what did we do?
The Jesus versus Frosty. Now
you've got some downloading sir.
I'll have that in moments. Thanks to net neutrality.
The first big media thing that I remember that was a surprise to me was a little bit later, and it was when the rumor was that the first movie of The Lord of the Rings had been found and was released online, and somebody where I worked downloaded it, and it was actually the movie. You know, you started playing it, and it really was.
Was it like a cam version?
The first one, yeah, that was.
Are you reminiscing about your first time you pirated something from the MPAA?
Obviously, I was just as guilty for watching it, but I didn't go out and find it because my thought was, you know, that was early enough days where it was kind of like, really, somebody's going to put an entire movie? It was very small. It was like old school YouTube size, so it was like a window that was like 400 pixels wide by it was wide format, so maybe like 200 pixels tall kind of thing.
Sorry, we're watching Jesus versus Frosty on Jay's laptop now. this is very much not South Park. I mean, it is
totally South Park.
It's cardboard cutouts, but there's no Stan, Kyle, Cartman, and Kenny.
They're all very different
looking. Well, they're looks like there's two Cartmans.
Rude. It's like if you go back and look at early Kenny Arcade.
But no, there's another one who looks just like Cartman.
Kenny
too.
Is definitely Kenny. I'm afraid to put the audio on.
Don't put the audio on.
Do not. From what I recall, do not turn that up.
Put the audio on, fat ass.
Speaking of the early days of piracy, what was the game? Like you were flying a spaceship, and there were some of the aliens were cat like creatures. What was that?
It's supposed to have been Jay Lee's. Fantasies,
bad trip. Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it.
I need more than that, Jay.
I remember the game was this really high end graphics game and came on, I think, like 6 to 10 5.25 floppies or maybe 3.5 inch floppies.
You're not talking about System Shock, are you?
Cannon?
No. God, it was you were flying in a starfighter. It was a starfighter.
Oh, was this a console game? Star Fox? No.
No. It was a
PC game. It was a PC game.
Do a barrel roll, Barrett.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Rumble Pack.
It was a very high-end video game, and I remember trying to get a copy of it off of a bulletin board on a 14.4 dial-up, you know.
I downloaded a beta version of Quake back in the – this would be probably 94, 95, somewhere around there. Because Quake, I mean, you know, for those of you who weren't following the scene back then.
Wolfenstein
was 92 or 93, maybe even 91. And then Doom was in the middle of that. And Quake was eventually released in 96, maybe? Anyway, I downloaded a near release beta version of it, and that was like the most amazing thing that I managed to pirate. I was so thrilled. I was like, I can't believe I found this. This is going to be so great. And, you know, of course, the computers couldn't run it, and it was all slow. And because, you know, at the time, it was super duper, like, amazing advanced. That was the next thing. I mean, people forget that, you know, Quake was a coming soon. The follow-up to Doom was coming soon for years and years and years.
I think we need to revisit this whole Star Fox thing. I think that the developers of Star Fox need to give... No, listen, Guardians of the Galaxy a call, because you've got Star-Lord, Star Fox, and then you've got a fox that's, you know, shooting things and driving around in a spaceship.
Rocket.
Does anyone else see
you've
with
got,
the rocket?
Well, you've got Rocket
lap.
The raccoon.
Yeah, that's a raccoon.
Well, yeah, but that...
Fox
but
raccoon,
I think
you
the...
look at this poor animation, poor drawings from, you know, in Star Fox.
Well,
no,
hang on.
Be...
I think you'd have to look up the history of Rocket the raccoon, and I think it may go back further than Star Fox.
Yeah.
I think it's a
yeah,
character
and I,
that's
I think Star
longer.
Fox is busy suing the weasel right now with
Star
some...
Star Weasel. and his woodpecker sidekick. They now,
my,
blast throughout
my,
the galaxy.
My piracy, my first piracy experience goes back pre-internet, which
Should
is
we
when
talk
you
about
actually
this on the air?
Somebody had to copy media and give you their give you a copy of the media.
Oh, yeah.
By hand. I had a beta copy of Photoshop.
Photoshop 1.0.
No, Photoshop
beta the beta version
something
of
something B point something B.
Did it have
like
two 8. Brushes?
Adobe is still mad about
did
that.
It do, did it do black and white?
it was very different because prior to that, all you had was like paint type programs that were really 8-bit, you know, where it's the huge squares and stuff like that. Photoshop, there were no layers then. It was everything, you know, when you worked on something, there was one layer. There was the live layer and you know, that was the one level, and that's it.
Wing Commander.
And so you could copy and paste things and put things on top of each other, but essentially, instead of layers, you would have like 10 or 12 Photoshop documents, and you would hope that when you copied it from one document to go paste that piece onto the, you know, final, that you didn't crash your machine because you used up all the memory.
Jay's figured out the game.
Yeah, Jay's game he was pirating was the original Wing Commander.
Although those aren't really cats, they do look a little bit like cats.
Yeah, the Killer Offie. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm actually going to be talking to Chris Roberts probably next month about Star Citizen, so I'll make sure and bring
Is
up that
Is he coming here? Are you traveling?
No, he'll be in Austin. Because the Cloud Imperium's in Austin. Robert Space Industries is Star Citizen.
That was like when the games, you know, before CD-ROM technology was really caught on, and you bought your games and you got the box and you had like a stack of floppy
15
disks.
Floppies that took you an hour to install, popping
Even
out
if
floppies.
You paid for it, it still took a long time. You know, they were stealing time from you away from your gameplay just to install mm-hmm. it. And, you know, and it couldn't just buy Wing Commander. You had to buy Wing Commander and QEMM. Mm.
You didn't have to have QEMM, but if you didn't have enough EMS memory, you didn't see all the extra animations.
You had to learn to write your own batch files with HiMem.sys
Absolutely.
And all of that stuff.
And there was the one that I remember took the longest to install, the game that I think had the longest install ever was the there's actually two of them. The first one was Star Trek 25th Anniversary, which was sort of an action-adventure Star Trek game, and the other one was its sequel, Star Trek Judgment Rights. But it was like a 20-floppy game, but after you'd swapped all 20 floppies out...
You had to put the first floppy back in.
And it would do like this decompressing thing, and
yeah,
it would sit there and decompress for like an hour on our 386s, and it was like it was like torture.
Well, remember when copy protection was having the key disk, too?
Yeah, that's the thing. You had to have,
You still had to have the disk, and if that became corrupted, which they did...
Yes.
You had to go write the company and be like... Because there was no, like email the company for a replacement. You had to like pick up.
Wasn't like downloading the replacement.
No, there's none of that. You had to have them mail you something. Oh man. Wow, the postal service.
Good times.
Did y'all ever have any?
There's what people are going to reminisce about.
Did y'all ever have any software that actually had like a physical dongle that you had to plug in to a PS2 port or?
I know that AutoCAD and some of the high end stuff would ship with that, and you had to have that. Because I remember one time we had my dad, friend's dad, we wanted to plug in a little serial joystick, little controller joystick, you know, so we could both play games. And, you know, this is thing in the back, so we just threw it somewhere. Not a big deal, right?
And
yeah, that was not a big deal until they came down and was like, where did this go? And we're like, I don't know. It's like his little sister had it. Who knows?
Yeah.
It was in her mouth. It was just
I know. I used to fiddle around in high school. I used to fiddle around with Lightwave, a 3D modeling program. And the pirated version of Lightwave had no dongle in it, but the README files would all talk about, like, make sure your dongle is connected to your parallel port, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, I'm glad I pirated this, so I don't have to care about that. Back in the day. Long time ago.
But now you can play Wing Commander in a web browser.
It's pretty amazing. That is indeed the Wing Commander music.
Is that on the Wayback Archive?
I found it on Let's Play SNES.com.
Oh, so it's it's the Super Nintendo version.
I prefer the Let'sGetSpyware.com site for playing games, but to each his own.
What is that, Newgrounds? Wing Commander games, Chris Roberts games, the stuff that Origin Systems put out when Chris Roberts was there, it always, like, that was the thing.
Origin was good.
When a new Chris Roberts game came out, your computer was automatically crap, and it was time to go buy all new stuff. Wing Commander came out. Everybody was, like, scrambling for 386s with Sound Blaster cards in them so they could play the game with the good effects. And when Wing Commander 2 came out, you know, if you didn't have a 486, you weren't playing that. And, it just, like, went from there. The big one was the Jet Fighter one, Strike Commander. I mean, that was, like, if you didn't have a 486 66DX2 with at least, you know, 8 megabytes of RAM, don't even bother applying.
Well, that was always, it was the horrible thing to see is you would, you know, go into, like, an electronics boutique, you go into these game stores, and they would always have the system requirements printed on the sides, and you'd see these hopeful faces go up and grab the game they wanted, and be like, oh, this is such great cover art, and they look at the side, and then they put it back.
It's like, my Tandy's not going to do this.
Well, yeah, I need a map coprocessor. I'm going to need more than 2 megs of RAM to run this game.
That was also the time when, you know, when computers were becoming things that people wanted, but they didn't know how to use. And they would come out. I was working at Best Buy at the time. People would come in and buy the software, read the system requirements. They believed that they had the system requirements. Loaded up, they couldn't get it to run. It would crash. And so we actually provided software install services where we'd install it,
Nice. Make
them a boot disk that would actually let them run the game. But even then, it was going to, if they were running on minimum hardware.
A lot of that was dicey. And the thing is, they would have, like, minimum requirements. And really, minimum requirements, that's just a slap in the face. That was usually a joke, if I remember. That's like if the moons are aligned and you actually can write operating systems and, you know, Richard Stallman is sitting behind you, maybe the stuff will run.
Thank you. Ugh, smelly.
All right, so we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Do we want to get a couple of try-by or fries real quick? Or
sure, I've got a few handy.
All right.
Here's one that is maybe kind of interesting. Last September, Microsoft created a universal keyboard for iOS, Android, and Windows, and now they've announced a foldable version. Now, they've given it the clever name Microsoft Universal Foldable Keyboard.
It says what it does. It does what it says.
It's got Bluetooth connectivity to work across multiple devices and does not have a dedicated Windows key, but it folds up with magnets.
But
so
only
gets
in half, though. I had, like, in 2002, I had one that folded up four ways, and it was to where you could put it in the pocket. This looks like it's just half a keyboard when you fold it. Albeit half a small keyboard,
yeah, it's
still
a
half a keyboard.
I had that one too, where it was a
pushed
hard
in
shell.
Yeah, that was
and
awesome.
It flipped for the handspring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I had for the handspring. It was like wallet sized.
Yeah.
I still had, and it's bulletproof.
About $100, yeah. Which, you know, that's still better. You know, the weird part there is where, you know, is by absence is Apple doesn't have anything like that. I mean, they have cases that. But the keyboard doesn't fold up. But if you do an Apple keyboard with your, say, iPad, you've got, it doesn't fold. It's kind of clunky compared to actually even this. So,
although I've carried an Apple keyboard, like a Bluetooth keyboard,
just jam it in your back pocket.
In my backpack.
it's just you'd
Fat
think you know usually
back.
That usually Apple kind of
Gene
plans
goes back
that
in business.
Stuff. Apple seems to, you know, their design philosophy usually means they think of these kinds of things, and so it's funny to see Microsoft steal a march on them. This next one, I think, probably is one of those that Jay would very much want, but
gimme.
SanDisk has unveiled the world's highest capacity micro SD card. So now you can lose a hard drive's worth of data in a thumbnail-sized sliver of plastic.
How many megabytes does it have?
It's a 200 gigabyte micro SDX card.
Wow.
So you can record, let's see, 20 hours of full HD video on the one card.
That's a lot of
or
gigs.
Or obviously you could put a lot of raw photos on
that.
That's
just crazy. I've got a 40 meg, 5.25 hard drive at home.
Yeah.
It is not inexpensive. It's going to be about $400. But, you know, imagine that. You know, we're talking about 200 gigabytes on something the size of basically your thumbnail.
Well, I think for embedded devices like BeagleBone Black that uses that as a hard drive, or Raspberry Pis that use that as a hard drive, now you can load up your entire media library, whatever you want to, and run around with that in your back pocket. That's, I think, where it's good. That's why I would buy it. I'm not going to take so many pictures. I'm going to blow 200 gigs, but I think it'd be awesome to have a server that would fit my shirt pocket that had that much storage on it.
Put it in your Raspberry Pi.
In your so Raspberry
cool
Pi hole.
And then there's a... so it sounds like at the very least, well, want but can't afford. Maybe we need that cat. How do we put that into try, buy, or fry? Wine?
Can we have a steal category?
Try, buy, fry, or kill someone.
Cry?
Yeah, let's have a steal category.
Try, buy, or sell your soul.
Try, buy, or cry because you can't have it. There's, let's see, on a piece of software, there's a piece of software called AirDrive now. That this is for people who have Android tablets and who use Windows. Essentially, the cool part about NetDrive is you install it on your PC and install AirDrive on your Android device, and then your Android device shows up as another drive letter in Windows.
Interesting.
You get that from the Google Play Store. So, because it's a pain, usually it's a pain to move files from a computer to an Android device.
Is it free?
Let's see.
I always use stuff like Samba. Like there's an SMB package, and there are a few different things that makes the Android device just show up as a file share. But I think you'd have to type in much, but I guess you'd have to know about that. It's not super easy.
Looks like it's free.
That's good.
Woo!
So you know, it just says install. It doesn't have any place where you have to buy it. Going to the Google Play Store. So, and that's all I've got. The other one would be too much discussion to do for.
Well, we could try buy or fry this laptop in front of me here. If you've got a couple of thousand,
you can go to, if you want to see the other stuff that we didn't talk about tonight, like the science stuff and that. If you go to geekradio.com on the front page, I posted links to all the stories that we talked about and didn't talk about tonight.
Science. She blinded me with science. Actually, I can't sing that because we'll have to pay for it or something.
No, we don't.
No, it's a radio station.
Just don't hurt your voice and it's going to be okay.
Well, I want to remind everybody, too, as we wrap things up here, that we do have the Geek Gathering on Friday, so come on out, hang
Midtown,
out with us.
Midtown, 2808 Milam and Drew.
Information about that is at geekradio.com.
Nice choice of flyers.
Everyone come out, see Jay Lee drinking wine.
It's a thing to behold. Yeah, so you can get ready for St. Patrick's Day when you drink green wine.
Ooh, that sounds... No, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, we've got 2 more weeks before that, right? 2 more weeks before St. Patrick's Day?
I think so,
today is
yeah.
the 4th, okay. So...
Ten days, okay.
Now, I usually run across and get a banh mi sandwich for the Geek Gathering, but I understand there's... And
a
I guess it's
Spanish
been,
restaurant.
There's a Spanish restaurant that's right there.
Or a Mexican restaurant.
It doesn't require crossing
they
the
bring food out to you, which is awesome. They track you down.
Holy if you're
crap.
Sitting so. Outside, they can order in there, and you can bring your drink... I don't think they have a liquor license yet.
No, I brought it in there. It's
you
cool.
You can bring it in
yeah.
there. Yeah, you can bring your drink.
I don't even want to advertise that, but they're very laid back. They're very community.
They're very happy to like have
part.
Customers,
yeah.
and they're providing good food. So
that bakery over to the side isn't too bad either. If they
are
stay
you coming
open.
Into town, still... Pete?
I sadly cannot make it. I have a prior commitment, but next Wednesday
right.
I will be in studio.
The weather's going to be nice
it
in May
when I
too.
See it.
We'll have to get
no,
you
well,
here in May.
The forecast is 70 degrees and sunny, as opposed to tonight, where there's like freeze warnings and
oh,
all this
right.
stuff.
That's right. Barrett's going to be out of pocket the whole month of May, so hopefully you'll find some time to come and visit
wow.
us.
Yes, come and visit us.
All right, well, there's the music. It's telling us that we got to get going. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse. See you next week.
Adios.
Or see you Friday.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk. Firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is